Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis, joined by Jacqueline Coley, my incredible co-host. We have an amazing guest, the star of Always Lola, Candace Cruz, is here.
Thank you.
And this is just a really exciting, it's a big, big day for me, because this movie, I feel like, should have won every Oscar the year it came out. Jacqueline, you're in the midst of award season. This is like your prime thing. You have the podcast where you talk about the award stuff going on.
Yes.
What's the latest? What was the last event you were at?
Last night, we were at the Governor's Awards, which I think if
that sounds important.
It does. This is where they give out the honorary Oscars, and as much as I was happy to be in the room with the cast of The Color Purple as Angela Bassett put a Sermon on the Mount, finally, you know, getting wronged for the egregiousness that was 1993's Was Love Got to Do with It when she lost to Holly Hunter, when Holly Hunter should have won for The Firm because that was the better performance in the year. But do I say this is something that's maybe my Roman Empire? No. What was great for me...
So you had a good time.
Yeah. What was great for me was that it was Mel Brooks. And it was one of those ones where I was like, I wish I could have given Mark a plus one.
Because, Mel Brooks was there.
Yeah, Mel Brooks was there. And I think John Mulaney hosted just so he could be up on stage to make Mel Brooks laugh. So that was like a really great moment. It's been an up and down week for comedians at award shows. Mm-hmm. But John Mulaney credited y'all's side. Like credit to y'all's side on that one, because y'all needed a win after Sunday.
So the Golden Globes were on Sunday. Yeah. Candace, do you watch the award stuff? Like, do you get swept up in this? You're an actor, you're a performer. Do you get swept up in the award side of things too?
I do. I love the award side of things. First of all, I love the pomp and circumstance of it all. I think that that is like America's version of royalty to some capacity that we have. Once a year, we get to see everyone get dressed up. There's something about the glamour and just, I've gotten to go to a handful of the award shows and be on the carpets next to these people. And it's just, you remember back in the day where celebrity was celebrity and you see someone and you just are just starstruck. Mm. There is that energy that's there.
Yeah.
Whether you're just like hanging out with your friends or you're seeing like J-Lo and the Brie Larson situation where
that
she
is
like,
a thing.
Had her moment.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's something about award season that is just so exciting. And just for anyone that doesn't even prescribe to all the movies and everything else, to see someone work so hard to get an award and to see that like relief and just excitement, I think is what I love so much about all of it.
Look at you making my profession feel less useless than I do
it's
every
not.
Day.
Oh, you're
it's not
you're
at all
doing
because
the
we
Lord's
bring
work.
Joy to so many people.
I've honestly, you have just like re-energized me. Can you come to my therapy session?
Please let me know. Next time I'll be there.
Every day I'm just like, what do? I just go drink champagne and pretend people care.
You're in the thick of the playoffs for your season. And then your football team also happens to be in the playoffs
they
this coming weekend
it.
As of this recording. So it's a big, big time for Jacqueline Coley right now. And I'm so tickled pink that you took time out of your busy schedule to join us here on Rotten Tomatoes alongside Candace, who has become like our our go-to action movie correspondent.
Yeah.
I hope you're okay with that title.
I love that.
Yeah, because the last one you were here for was
Gerard Butler.
That's right.
Olympus has fallen. And then later that week, Candace and I were texting each other, and we're like, you're watching London Has Fallen now, right?
Yeah.
So we kind of like did our own trilogy view. And so for this movie, which is 13 hours, directed by Michael Bay.
It felt like 13 hours.
You have to put a little bit more respect on Michael Bay's name. Michael Bay presents.
Michael Bay, who has his own boulevard on the Paramount lot.
Yeah.
Michael Bay directs and presents 13 hours. The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi first came out in 2016. And it's a film that is based on a true story, a harrowing true story of survival, of just trying to get through the night, of trying to be, trying to step up and do the right thing in the face of adversity. A lot of political intrigue around this story. But at its core, it's about these soldiers and just them putting their lives on the line over the course of this 13-hour, not to be confused with 13 days, which is also a political war intrigue kind of movie starring Kevin Costner about the Bay of Pigs.
That's right.
Which I also did rewatch this past week just because it's got 13 in it. And it's like, you know, it's the Bay of Pigs. Benghazi. So I've been doing a lot of, and this is all on the heels of Netflix had a like restored footage in color World War II documentary that came out right before Christmas.
That.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Footage is unbelievable.
I haven't seen this one.
I'm a pretty big fan of this stuff, right? Whether it's you're doing a narrative with a war movie or it's like an actual documentary, and I think I'm 43, so I'm getting to that age where this is just what my personality is now. I just like to sit at home with a dog and watch war movies or war documentaries, and that's pretty much all I do with my evenings. So this movie, I'm so excited to get y'all's take on it because I openly gushed about this movie when it was released in 2016. Back when Christian and I were doing Schmoes, this got the coveted 5 out of 5 Schmoes from Mark Els, which I did not give out a lot. And I heard from some fans that this was their kind of barometer for any movie that I did not give 5 out of 5 Schmoes to after this. The fans would comment on YouTube and say, oh, well, it's not as good as 13 hours. I'm like, you can't do that.
They can, though. And this is your Roman Empire.
This is it. Yeah.
You have to think about this anytime you love a movie. Is it as good as 13 hours?
That's your threshold right there.
And I might be on this island by myself because it's 51% rotten. It is 82% with the audience score.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll go around the room and get everybody's take before we turn it over to Tim Ryan, our good buddy, who's going to be telling us what the critics were saying at the time of the film's release. But I want to give a huge shout out because on the website, RottenTomatoes.com right now, you can check out our editors do such great work. We have Michael Bay movies ranked by Tomato Meter. Michael Bay, he's a big name. Everybody has seen the Transformers movies. On the Tomato Meter, not the highest.
Yeah.
You know, he's got 68% as his number one movie, which is Ambulance from last year, or 2 years ago now. So that's 68%. The Rock from 96, which I think is maybe the best action movie of the 90s, is 67%. And then 13 Hours is number 4, but it's still 51% rotten. And if you wanted to guess what Michael Bay's lowest rated on the Tomato Meter movie is, yes, it's a Transformer, and it's The Last Knight. Mark deservedly Robert. So.
But how many billions? Do we know how many billions Michael Bay has? Brian, look that up. Because I would tell you that—
Tens and tens and tens.
I don't think I care about the Tomato Meter score when you literally
when
have the
dollars.
GDP of a small economy worth of box office receipts.
And people, Candace, you don't hate the Transformers movies, right?
No.
You're in on those?
I love those.
Okay.
I mean, granted, if we're talking about, substance of them, that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
But the OG Transformers, Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox, come on.
Definitely.
At least give the first one its, award to that.
I still—
Everything else, I agree with the Transformers Last Knight. That one, I didn't even get all the way through.
No,
I couldn't.
I don't think I used my pass where I can leave a movie early once a year on that one, but I kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
Only once a year.
But so you sit through movies that you're just like, I've only used my pass once. I have to sit through
that's
this.
The solemn Hippocratic oath that I took a long time ago. I have to sit here and get through this thing. So the first couple Transformers, I love the Camaro. Anytime I still see a yellow Camaro on the highway, I'm like, it could be Bumblebee. Could be Bumblebee. So let's get into 13 Hours. Jacqueline, do you want to give us a little catch up? Of what this movie's about?
I can. I definitely can. Okay. I don't want to give a catch-up on what this movie's about. So 13 Hours tells the story of the Benghazi assault in Libya and basically the idea that there was an assault happening due to a a Muslim cartoon that sparked violence, supposedly, but also there may have been some civil unrest that was happening there. And this team of soldiers who were nearby, they really weren't even the guys that were supposed to be on the mission. They get the call and they say, you got to get to Benghazi. Stuff's about to go down. It's about to get real. Very Michael Bay in that. Mm-hmm. And so these group of guys, many of whom were just trying to get home, like they were supposed to be heading back home, but they got to do this one last job. And it is literally one of those covert missions. Getting into the country was difficult. Getting to the embassy was difficult. And then also trying to secure the ambassador and trying to make sure there was as little zero loss of life. This is very much a Zero Dark 30, but as if everybody knew that it was happening at the same time. And mm-hmm. so we sort of follow this team as they attempt to, you know, secure the area. They're dealing with people back in command lying to them. They've got the whole sort of like, you know, the one soldier who's like, I know what's about to go down. And then, of course, John Krasinski is in it. There is a big loss of life, spoiler alert. But we sort of follow them and see who exactly is going to make it home and who's going to get saved. And this is just an excuse to just blow shit up for 2.5 hours.
John Krasinski, yes. You have yeah. Pablo Schreiber.
There you go, mm-hmm. Pablo Schreiber. John Krasinski, fresh off the cover of Men's Health. John Krasinski, I might add. This is not the doughy Jim from The Office.
I can't wait to talk about that, too, yeah. because you have, like, Pablo and you have, like, James Badge Dale, and, like, these are mm-hmm. kind of guys that we've come to know as, like, you're just good at playing a tough guy.
Yeah.
Krasinski, we didn't know he had this gear, so we'll talk about that once we get into movie talk. For right now, Candace, you're our esteemed guest. You have the movie Always Lola that is now streaming everywhere, which is so exciting, and it's doing great. It's doing gonzo numbers on all the platforms. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong? With the 51% attributed on the tomato meter.
Can I do a halfway here? I was honestly thinking about this again this morning. I've been reviewing it. I'm like, do I agree with it? I would say they're wrong, but I feel like it needs to be halfway between the audience score and the rotten. It doesn't need that much more.
Okay.
But I do believe that it needed a little bit more than 51 just on the storyline and all of the historical elements of it and what actually happened. Because as for action part, keep it at the 51.
Mm-hmm.
Solid on the 51. But like the heart of it, like when you got to the end, and we can obviously dive into that more, but I think slightly more. But not much.
Okay. All right. So maybe we're getting into fresh territory with you. Maybe we're fresh adjacent.
Fresh adjacent.
Like 59.9%.
Sure. We'll give it that. There we go. I like that. We're fresh adjacent.
Yes.
Jacqueline, how does one feel about La Tomato Meter?
So this is, we're in 2024 now. And I think I need to take a different approach to Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. We've done a few episodes. And I think I want to now say that Rotten Tomatoes is right. In both. I think the audience score is a direct reflection of what it feels like to watch this movie because I actually did watch it at my desk. I'm sitting there typing awards predictions and this is playing in the background. And I was like distracted from like my job to be like, you know, look at John, look at this. And
not
like,
a movie I'd recommend putting on in the background, like when you're doing the dishes.
You know what I mean? But it was one of those things where I was like, I was finding myself, it's very watchable. It's very audience driven. I would have liked to have seen this with a crowd, but any sort of critical thinking around everything that is happening, you're like, this is a fantasy. Like, this did not happen this way. I know it didn't happen this way. And I know that this movie is meant to make me think that it happened this way. And so that gives me the like 50% of the people will be fooled by this movie into being like, America. Mm-hmm. And like the rest of them will be like, this is ridiculousness. Like, this is not real. That many white men in that country, like you're a walking red flag. Like they know where you are. This is like the suspension of disbelief that we have to believe that James Bond could be an effective spy after you weren't fighting Russians.
Too good looking to be a spy.
That he can't be?
I mean, seriously. I mean, James Bond now looks like
Hasan Minhaj. He closes down the bar every night. He's gambling into the wee hours of the morning. Yeah. He's strikingly handsome.
Strikingly.
And has no compunction about having sex with random women. At all ports of call.
Spreading that seed all over the world.
The idea of that dude not being anything but a walking STD and a body bag is just laughable in modern things. Like the you know, super uber spy now looks like Hasan Minhaj or better yet, probably Rami Malek, because you want somebody with like a shorter stature that can just like sneak in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what
he
I'm saying.
He just plays the villain instead.
So I actually say Rotten Tomatoes is right in the sense that like, how much fun I had is like an 82% certified fresh blast, but this is ridiculous.
Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. This is a hell of an action movie from start to finish.
I like that you got to own it.
There's a lot of political, you can look at the failings around our leadership and around the world as far as like how this situation actually came to pass. But if you're just looking at a setup where you basically have like a diplomatic, you have an embassy and then you have a CIA annex. And those are your two buildings that we're talking about in this movie. And we are under attack really at both of them. And we have this small team that is just going to try to do everything that they can over this night, not only to survive it themselves, but to rescue people. That is the movie. Then that's the story that we're telling. I thought it did an incredible job of just being a kick-ass action movie with a lot of heart that you're talking about, Candace, where it's not just the whiz-bang explosions of it. It's actually the heart that you feel underneath it and what you're rooting for these guys to pull through. So I think that Rotten Tomatoes got this wrong. I think the audience is correct at 82%. I might even bump it a little higher because it's just such a well-made action movie. Now we turn it over to Tim Ryan. So he's our good buddy. He's our correspondent here who does all of the review curation management at Rotten Tomatoes. He's great at it. And he is going to tell us what the critics were saying at the time. Which I think I was a critic on Rotten Tomatoes at this time. So what were the other critics saying about 13 Hours back in 2016? Here's 2 Minutes with Tim. 2 Minutes
with Tim. It might have been something of a flashpoint in the red state, blue state divide, but 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, was probably more discussed and debated than it was actually seen. It had the worst box office performance for any Michael Bay film. And to be fair, there are a number of factors at play here, including the fact that the movie was not attached to a franchise. And it didn't promise the kind of bombastic good time that usually draws people to Michael Bay movies. But it's indisputable that 13 Hours fared far worse with moviegoers than the likes of American Sniper and Lone Survivor, two other gritty war films that were sizable commercial hits and fared well with the critics. They're both certified fresh. And with the critics, 13 Hours was genuinely divisive, with a number of reviewers feeling the film suffered from simplistic politics and tough-to-follow action, while others admired both its largely sober tone and evocative, visceral feeling for its setting. 13 Hours is rotten at 51% on the tomato meter with 225 reviews, and it has an 82% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Kevin P. Sullivan of Entertainment Weekly wrote, "Bay works best with chaos. There's no shortage of that here. It's getting from firefight to firefight that's the problem, lending the film a video game-like structure that grows repetitive in the back half." However, in a fresh review, Will Leach of The New Republic wrote, "Bay may lack interest in basic story construction or coherent battle scenes, but the guy has a preternatural skill at evoking sensation." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi is a comparatively mature and restrained effort from Michael Bay, albeit one that can't quite boast the impact its fact-based story deserves." So that's 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Back to you, folks.
I love that. I think it was Leach who said preternatural ability to evoke sensation.
Yeah.
That's what you want from Michael Bay. And look, I think part of my love of this movie is sort of a response to all the Transformers movies where I was like, where was this ability in making me care about human beings in the Transformers franchise? Mm-hmm. You know, and like all the really intense action scenes where I was feeling everything in here, I just kind of was like shoving popcorn in my face and just watching robots fight each other. They didn't really care about for most of the Transformers movies. So maybe that's it. But now it's time to get into movie talk. Brian, hit the music. We got a lot to discuss here. First and foremost, so I saw this in theaters. Jacqueline, you did not.
Definitely did
and
not.
And Candace, you did
not. I did
not.
But okay. I did rent it. This was definitely, I was in enough of a red state moment that I did rent this. Yeah.
Were you back in Texas when this came out?
No, I was like coming and doing the back and forth. But this was a movie that honestly, I think it may have been the fact that people kept giving you crap about it on the Schmodown. That I was like, I need to watch this.
You want to come defend your boy. That means a lot to me.
I'm not even kidding you. I do think that was part of it. Mm-hmm. Like when I finally saw it was like maybe 2016 late or 2017 early. And it was because this is your, like, again, I cannot describe to you how many times I saw people bring this up in Schmodowns, in your comment section. Yeah. This was like a thing.
It was my cross to bear because I was like, hey, look, I think this is a great movie. And for what it does, it's like, you know, it's I'm not comparing it to Greta Gerwig's Little Women. I'm not doing that. You know, it's just like, oh, OK, this is here. That's there. And they're two very different things.
Right.
What this movie wanted to do, I thought it accomplished it in spades. Candace, I guess my question to you, because I got a text from you when you were watching
it. Oh, God.
And it was all caps. This is so intense.
Yeah.
when you saw, now we kind of accept John Krasinski as an action star, right? Yeah. Because he's great in the Jack Ryan show, mm-hmm. and he's sort of gotten into that world with like A Quiet Place and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But back in 2016, he was still primarily known as Jim from the show The Office, right. which everybody loves and rewatches ad nauseum. I read that he went from 25% body fat to 8% for this role. So this feels like the role where he transformed himself and sort of expanded his horizons. Mm-hmm. Did it feel like that to you watching the movie, or because you're watching this in 2024 now for the first time, you already kind of expected Krasinski to just be that badass?
I kind of already expected it. I want to say I love John Krasinski. He's one of my favorite actors because I love rom-coms. I love him. He's just so endearing. And I think I love him and Emily Blunt, like, in Real World so much. So I always root for him in everything that he does. But I was never an Office fan. I never really watched it. I've seen episodes and things like that. So to me, I only have two versions of John Krasinski in my head. It's rom-com, early 2000s, and action star that he is now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even realize that this was his first, like, venture into the action world. So knowing that, watching it, I was, like, kind of looking for little bits where I was like, oh, does he know how to do this yet? Yeah. Like, is he good? Like, watching from the future and looking back, I had to, like, watch his little nuances, but I thought he was fantastic.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
It was so weird seeing this movie in theaters, Jacqueline, because, first of all, this was coming on the heels. It came out in January of 2016. So you still have Force Awakens is crushing into the box office, and you have some other, like, big Christmastime movies that were still making a lot of money, probably over 13 hours. But I'm sitting in the theater, and the two big questions I had at the time were, okay, can we get back to 90s action movie Michael Bay? Can we get back to Bad Boys, The Rock Michael Bay, producer of Con Air kind of stuff, as opposed to the Transformers stuff, which I was just so tired of, and it just felt like it meant nothing to me after a while. So can we get that Michael Bay back? But I think, arguably, Jacqueline, the bigger question was, can John Krasinski pull off an action star?
Yeah.
And this movie opens, and he's on a plane flying in to this situation, and immediately, just the look on his face, I'm like, whoa, this ain't the cute schlub from The Office who's chased after Pam. This is a different dude. And then we're immediately into this weird situation on a very narrow street where we're being interrogated. These guys with guns are coming up to the car where Krasinski and his buddy are. And when he just has the gun ready to go, it's like, oh my God, who is this guy?
Yeah. Can I also say, too, I was rewatching some of Michael Bay's interviews about this particular movie, and it's so interesting watching it now where he was talking about casting John Krasinski. And he was literally like, I was talking to some of my colleagues. I can't remember who he was talking to specifically, name dropped in there. But he was like, do not cast movie stars in this movie. You're telling a factual story. You want to do it justice. You want to find guys actually match the criteria of who these men really were. Find people that can do that, and you're not watching a movie star. And for me to hear that, and I'm like, but John Krasinski, to me, is a movie star.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, that fact that that was his, like, breakthrough to make him into a quote-unquote movie star is just really cool.
Yeah. This is where it's like, okay, I got to read between. This is where my, like, media literacy obsession is, like, I read through the bullshit. So, like, first of all, Michael Bay wanted Mark Wahlberg originally, who was a bona fide movie star at that time.
And I think it would have changed the movie.
And it would have changed the movie, but that's where it's like, oh, I didn't get what I want, so now I'm going to pretend this is what I always wanted. Mm. Also, too, kids, this is post-Chris Pratt doing Zero Dark Thirty and Moneyball, and they had already shown that if you take the schlubby actor from the comedy and you then give him a physical transformation, you get a lot of press around that. And so it sort of became like a bit of a formula, a bit of that. I mean, more the latest one was Kumail Nanjiani when he did The Eternals. But that has actually been a pretty standard little thing that these guys do. And it gets the movie a lot of press. You get these men's health covers, just like Chris Pratt did. John Krasinski got it on this one. I think what's more interesting about John Krasinski in this is the role that he's playing is a very like stark divide. I mean, John Krasinski is a Boston thespian. Him doing a role like this, I think, sort of marries maybe some of what maybe the folks back home would want him to be able to do. Because, like, The Office is a great show. I'm not trying to pretend that wasn't, like, an American.
Oh, yeah, you guys see John's new movie? Yes. He's finally got guns. He's finally walking around, beating the crap out of people. That's what we like.
And that is a real thing. And I think this movie sort of got into that. I am more interested in how desperately this movie like American Sniper, they wanted to get conservatives to not hate Hollywood. This was the last bastion of them trying to make movies for the red meat state to say to them, this is for you, don't hate us. And 8 years later, everyone is hoping that half of Hollywood is on a list. Well, I'm just saying.
I think you would probably find
like
Michael Bay and Clint Eastwood for American Sniper would be those filmmakers that, not even down political lines, but just people who like, want just like a meat and potatoes action flick would go to, you know, Clint Eastwood, obviously, with his Western, you know, heritage and all that stuff. But Michael Bay, too. Like, again, this is a guy who makes the Transformers movies and they make billions. They used to make billions of dollars. Right. Yeah. But before that, he was like the guy that you would tap in the 90s to the Bad Boys movies, The Rock. And it's like this guy just knows how to tell such a cool story and have so much just ridiculous action in it. But it's like you trying to do work, Jacqueline, and then having this movie on in the background, it would probably be the same thing if you were trying to do some sort of other task while Bad Boys or while The Rock is on. And like you just find yourself like, I am going to have to clean the house later because I got to see Stanley Goodspeed and Sean Connery get out of this thing alive.
Yeah, it's an engrossing movie. It's a movie that like pulls you in. There's a tension to this movie. I said like 2 hours of blowing it up. That's actually not what happens. But it is a lot of tension leading up to could this blow over? It feels like a pot on the bubble of a kettle for pretty much, I would say, three-fourths of this thing.
Yes.
And then it really kicks it into high gear. And that kind of tension over this long of a runtime to really keep that going, it is an accomplishment. I don't want to take anything away from it. But this movie feels like such a movie back from a different time, like of what we would make at that time, but also the types of movies that they would market at that time. And then, two, it was, like, the way that they did it, like they wanted to get like politicians to be quotes on the cover. Like the idea of that now is just bizarre to me. Imagine them sending a movie to Ted Cruz. I guess they did with things like Sound of Freedom. But like this is a studio movie. This is not an independent movie. This is part of the like,
and again,
you know,
look at the release date of this movie. January 2016, right before it. I'll just say everybody became much more aware of politics in this country later on in that year. And so, you know, Candace, as you're watching this movie for the first time, it's almost an unfair question to ask, like, what scene really stood out to you? Because so much of the movie is, we're shooting at each other, there's explosions, there's stuff going on. Can you pinpoint a scene where you're like, oh, that's why I feel like the audience got it right on their scale? Or why this movie is 51%, but it still accomplished something?
Well, I mean, I think the action is probably where a lot of the audience score comes into play. But my favorite scenes were actually at the very end, right when they're all sitting on the roof. And there's just like this palpable energy that they did such a great job of being like, something else is about to happen. Obviously, I know there's 30 minutes left, so something's obviously going to happen. But something is about to happen. There's an air of like, anytime someone turns around, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to get shot. Something's going to come out and whatnot. And it's the last moments that we get the gentleman just kind of reflecting on their family, the fact that he just found out that his wife is pregnant. Like, that scene on the roof is really where I gave the bump in the score, because I think that that's where the heart of everything is. I'm an Army brat myself. My entire family is military. So I think when it comes to those types of things, that's where they really get me at the heartstrings. It's like, yes, at the end of the day, it is a big explosion movie and action and all of that. But you boil it down, there is humanity and there's loss on each end. And so for that, and for them to just be sitting there and talking about it, and that being the last moment that we get with this character too, it was just like, oh my God.
Mm. Yeah, and even the moments that humanize these folks Rhone. For me were early in the movie where mm-hmm. we're on the base. We're at the mm-hmm. embassy, we're at the annex, and they're just kind of sitting around and just waiting for something to happen, anything mm-hmm. to happen, really. Yeah. I mean, these guys, they're working out, they're kind of going through their drills and stuff, and then they're watching Anchorman or whatever's on, but yeah. it's like, we know that there might be a situation, you know, and now you also find yourself going up against your sort of corporate overlords that mm-hmm. you would have in the military system yeah. where you have achievers like, you know, just stand down. And now there's real stuff happening. And just to see them clock the security breach possibilities at this new location, when they're looking around the building, they're like, okay, well, you're exposed here, you're exposed here. You know, and a lot of the Libyan forces on the ground were there to defend Americans, and they did a heroic job doing that, which this movie doesn't touch on, I think, enough.
At all.
And that mm-hmm. might be something that, you know, I would push back against a little bit with the filmmaker.
Right.
But if you're watching that, you really feel a sense of, I care about these folks as people, not mm-hmm. just as like them being badass, you know, macho military dudes, but you actually care about their lives.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and that was something I didn't expect, Jacqueline, from a guy like Michael Bay, who had just for the last 15 years just been throwing robots and Mark Wahlberg drinking Bud Light in our face.
I think it's interesting, too, because this is a post-Jack Bauer 24 world mm-hmm. as well. And I will say that I think that the sort of idea of these lone-type soldiers saving the day, you know, lone survivor, American Sniper, Jack Bauer, they all sort of have this. This was a team of them sort of doing the same thing.
A team of Jack Bauers.
You know, a team of them. But that is actually the part that I have to be, like, that's the part where I'm like, there's no way that this is real. That's the part when I'm watching this, I'm like, yeah, these six guys. Because it also, we know what the actual loss of life was on the ground that day, and we mm-hmm. actually know that they did not secure the embassy, and that there was actually, you know, it was completely overrun, and that there were hundreds of sort of folks attacking it. The idea that these guys were the only line of defense is laughable. Like, everyone would have died if that was the case, if they didn't have the Libyan soldiers
right.
and that sort of thing coming about it. So that's actually the part that I'm like, this has to be a video game. Like, just call a Master Chief and I'll feel better about it than if you actually try to say that this is real. And I will say, post all of these things, because this is based on a book, 13 Hours, just like American Sniper, they've all been sort of like poked holes with as far as like the accuracy and the truth. And there's some things that'll never be determined because somebody on the ground says this and somebody on the ground, Zero Dark 30 is another one. Mm-hmm. Somebody on the ground says this, somebody else says that. But there's been enough evidence with a lot of these ones where it's like they knew they could sell a lot of media and a lot of books if they sort of made this idea happen. The one thing I'm more concerned about is the idea that I was a military person. The idea that the military would give bad orders is nothing new. That is not something that is whatever.
And that's one of the big discrepancies
yeah.
in this movie yep. is if you're looking at what the truth was, where you have the soldiers who survived said, like, no, we got the stand down order to not go.
Yes. Yeah.
And we decided to anyway. The chief, who is based on a real life person,
yeah.
said,
mm-hmm.
I never gave the stand down order. So
that already, is definitely a discrepancy. But this is what's weird about that. I know about chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
That chief might have never gave him that order. That is absolutely true. But he could absolutely make known what his wishes were without
right.
giving that order. And then somebody down the line
sure.
gives that order. I'm sorry. I've lived on enough military bases to know how that goes. Honestly, I've lived in corporate America long enough to know how that goes. But yeah, no, that is the part where I'm like, you got to read between the lines a little bit. It is the human story. It is the act that they sort of humanize these guys. The fact that, you know, look, guys that have families back home and they're not bad on the eyes, like all of these things sort of like play and tug with our heartstrings, because at a certain point you're looking at which one of these guys is going to make it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and that's part of the thing. I mean, this was also around the time when I started getting to do USO tours and like going to the Middle East and like just being on bases and stuff in various parts, some which are,
yeah.
you know, you always feel very safe. They always do a great job making you feel like, you know, I'm not in the newscaster helicopter situation. But
yeah.
you're over there and like, you know, you know that these guys and that you're relaxed, that you're entertaining them at a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at any time something could happen where it's like now that switch gets flipped. And so to see the way that I think Michael Bay is a guy that I trust intrinsically to show me what it's like when that switch gets flipped, where it's like we're just sitting around doing nothing. We're bored out of our mind. We're watching comedies that make us feel like we're home. And then, boom, here now we got to go into battle. And it's like it's almost like you're so well trained that you're not even thinking consciously about it. It's now it's time to do the cool gun loading thing and make all the noise and just run into whatever firefight you have. I think this movie does such an exceptional job of showing the bravery of people like that. I'm willing to eschew some of the, this may have happened that way. This one may have been for the portrayal of that, because I think that that's deserved.
And Michael Bay said that that was his goal. He was making, like, he wanted to make the veterans who he said a lot of them worked on a lot of his movie sets and people in, like, The Grip and sort of behind the scenes and below the line guys. He wanted to give them a movie, and I think that's what this movie does. He turns those guys into the Avengers, which is great. does not makes it about as realistic, but I get like the earnestness of wanting to do that. Let's also remember every movie with American military portrayed in any way is going to be somewhat positive just based on the fact that the U.S. military does that. And they these guys may be criticizing the apparatus of the U.S. military, but in the end, the guys are still heroes, which makes this a recruitment tool.
You mentioned the Avengers, and one of the benefits of being an Avenger is that you have your own very unique costume, and you can tell who is who, and everybody looks different. Candace, did you have trouble kind of differentiating? Because other than now the super famous John Krasinski, it's like these guys, like Pablo Schreiber, for instance, was in Den of Thieves, and with our boy, Gerard Butler, and he's great in it. And I loved watching that even more because I'd already seen 13 Hours. But like everybody else in this movie, it maybe by design just kind of blends in and feels interchangeable, even though they are based on real human beings with their own stories.
Yeah. Can I just say, obviously, I hope whoever's listening, this is not a spoiler, but one of the gentlemen that does die, I had to literally check and I was like, which one died? Like, I hate saying that, but they all looked the exact same except for two of them. And that was it.
I had three of them.
I had Tonto. I knew who he was. He was very identifiable, and he was like the comedic like relief in a lot of the movie.
They all have that same sort of sense of humor where they're going to be very sarcastic as they're like shooting people.
Yeah.
But Pablo, that's Tonto, who plays Tonto. He was like the funny one.
He was the funny one where he was like, he would always come in with the one-liners at the end of it all. And for a second, I thought he was the one that went down because they don't really show the face of who's fallen. And I was like, no, he just said that he was protected and now he's not.
They'll say something like, Bravo's down. And I'm like, wait, which one was Bravo?
Yeah.
So those were the two that I could identify. Outside of that, I had no idea who was who. They didn't do a really good job of us like letting us know whose name was who either. Identifiable. It's like this guy's redhead with this red beard. This guy's the brunette guy with this beard. We never really say their names. So
I could identify who David Denman was because he was also in The Office.
He was also in The Office.
He was also in The Office. And like, no offense, he also looks like the guy that was on his first movie set. Like he was the guy that did not look comfortable. Compared to the other, he did not look comfortable in any aspect of this portrayal. I could tell that, like, James Dale Badgley, Pablo Schreiber, and some of these
James Badgley feels like a dude who just walked out of, like, a real boot camp and just and decided to lend his talents to a movie.
Exactly. And so the other reason why I know Pablo Schreiber, because I follow his Instagram, which, ladies, you should.
He's a fan of surfing.
He's a fan of surfing.
And thus, you're a fan of his.
And when he's done surfing, he often takes Instagrams. And I'm awesome. Everyone should check out Halo. It's going to come back.
Does he wash his surfboard on his abs? Is that how?
He washes himself. I'm not kidding you. Like, he gets out of the seawater and then he, like,
slow-mo?
puts the wetsuit halfway down. I'm putting way too much. Sorry.
Will he be James Gunn's Aquaman?
He's a very good actor. He was also in American Gods.
He's fantastic.
But I will go ahead and say his Instagram is also great. And then John Krasinski. So those three were identifiable to me. But no, I couldn't tell you who Oz was or Tig.
Do we like Michael Bay? I still, one of the big failures of 2 years ago now was I still haven't seen Ambulance with that Michael
either.
Bay directed with Jake Gyllenhaal, who might be, you know, another guy where it's like you knew him as this incredible actor, sort of Oscar contender. And he seems to now be able to transform more into whatever he wants. I mean, he's a chameleon, but I could see him being like a Krasinski-like badass if he so chose. Maybe that is him in Ambulance, and I just haven't investigated it yet. I really want to see Ambulance.
I watched the trailer.
Roadhouse, too.
Okay. Jonah Hill's going to be in Roadhouse.
Yeah.
He is the next guy.
Yeah, he is.
He's the next dude.
But he already kind of did that with Jarhead. Yeah. He kind of did that with, like, some other movies. So he's been that guy, but they've always been so, like, Hurt Locker-y. They've been like, yeah, he's going to play an action star. Well, actually, he did it with Prince of Persia. That's one he wants to let people forget, but, you know,
I did see Prince of Persia, and he was... I can't even say he was good because it's like so miscast, but it's like, he did the job on set and it was fine. But I feel like Roadhouse is going to be the movie that announces like to the world that we have
Jake
like a
Gyllenhaal.
New guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, we're talking about Krasinski making this transition. And Jacqueline, you made a great point where like in the 80s, when I was a little kid, you had like your Van Dammes and Stallones who were just guys mm-hmm. who seemed like they were just carved out of granite from birth. Right.
Yeah.
And they were just these jacked action stars. And then after Die Hard, you started getting like a more normal dude, just like in whatever situation. You know, mm-hmm. you have like Bruce Willis just trying to get out of a building, or Keanu Reeves just trying to stop a bus from exploding. And now you have like, let's take a schlubby actor. It's almost like an experiment that Hollywood likes to do. Let's take a guy who's known for comedy or known for just kind of being a little doughy, like a Chris Pratt, and yep. let's make them into Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep. Yep.
And you're right. It's such a career, not even change for them. It's just a career boom.
Yes.
For them. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember seeing a video of John Krasinski and Chris Pratt together, and they were doing the Murph, which is this thing. It was named for a guy, this legendary soldier who passed away, and that was his workout.
Oh, yes.
You do, I think it's 100 sit-ups, 200
push-ups or something.
100 pull-ups, 200 sit-ups, and 300 push-ups or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then you, like, run a mile. And it's I've done it. It's very, very hard. It's very, very... I did not feel as well as those guys looked in the video afterwards.
Wow.
But they were doing it together, so I'm just kind of watching these dudes like, oh, okay, this is kind of the crowning moment of their transition, and now they can be action stars. I think it's kind of cool that we do that, though.
I think it's cool that we do that. I think what's interesting before is those guys were just assumed to have good bodies, because there's definitely the, like, Chris Hemsworth in Star Trek is not the Chris Hemsworth of Thor, right? Mm-hmm. Liam Hemsworth in even the first Hunger Games is not the Liam Hemsworth towards the last Hunger Games. Right. So, like, it was just assumed that these, like, nice-ish body guys, not slubby, but, like, nice-ish body guys, mm-hmm. they could, like, turn it up. It's now the, like, spectrum of, like, we will literally take an actor who looks like he never lifted anything.
Yep.
And only eats donuts.
And who was strictly known for basically stand-up, like Kumail
yes.
was.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Also, can I go ahead and say, and again, I'm friends with his wife, who was also on the podcast, so I'm not saying anything. It's so weird, the backlash he got. The white boys get fit all the time, never get any backlash. He decides to get fit, and they're literally like, who are you? Like, that's, like, really, like, in retrospect, like...
Yeah.
I never understood it. I just saw the, you know, before and after, and I was like dear God. I wanted to be like Kumail's dad and order the socks of... Because Kumail's dad ordered, like, socks made of his son being jacked. And I'm like, I kind of want those socks, too. Like... It was my favorite thing about Eternals.
Absolutely. And like the idea that people would be upset about that, like, I'm like, what is going on? Like, he got in shape. I think for you as a comedian, too, because, like, what hope do you have, Mark, if they're going to, like, rail against you for getting in shape?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, again, now we're recording this in early January, and it's just one of those New Year's resolutions that everybody has. And, like, I just have that thing I think a lot of other comics have where I go to the gym a lot, but you're in there. And every so often, you're loading up the weight on, you're about to try to break your bench press record, your squat record.
Yeah.
And you have that thought in the back of your head, like, what am I doing this for again?
Yeah.
Like, I have two sets tonight. I'm not going to get drafted. I'm not going in the NBA lottery. Like, what am I doing this
Alzheimer's.
For?
Alzheimer's.
You could be the next.
Prevent Alzheimer's. That's literally my main reason for working out. I hate it. I hate every aspect of it.
Oh, see, I love working out.
You do the, okay, so your workout is like this intense boxing kind of thing that you like doing too,
I do boxing, and then I also work out at campaign training and do like heavy lifting and things like that now.
Do you
too.
Really?
I do.
All right.
So Jesus. I've got some good numbers.
Candace
now.
Has kindly offered for me to take one of her boxing classes with her.
Yes.
And I'm like, I need to like do another boxing class for like a month before I step up. Well, and
listen,
enter the cruise dojo.
I will only say I only started doing boxing because majority of the time I go out for movies, they or any type of audition, it's they want me to be like the badass, the the bitch. Can I say bitch? I can cuss on this, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. The bitch, the whatever. And so I was like, I don't have anger in my life. I'm a very happy, positive person. And so I was like, I need to get more anger in my life. So that's why I chose these workouts. And now I'm just obsessed with them. So I feel very relatable to John Krasinski in this regard.
There you go.
Because I was the nerd. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to like try and be the superhero.
I'm going to see you in a movie.
Let's
I'm
going to
be
it. There
front row opening night. I'm going to be like, oh, I can't wait to see Candace. She's so good in rom-coms. And she was so good
see,
in
exactly.
that coming of age movie, always. Lola, I can't wait to, oh my God, look at her.
We share a birthday too, so I mean, John Krasinski and I were one in the same here.
You share a birthday?
Yes.
That's cute.
October 20th. Was
this John Krasinski pre or post Emily Blunt? Did these abs get him Emily
this
Blunt?
This was post, because he talks about he had just had the first baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is first baby movie.
I do like that for
a
those
nice little
women.
Thing for an actor yeah. to tap into as well, playing this role.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I have something to live for back home. Mm-hmm.
That is a yeah. good one. I also knew that's when he was going to survive. Also, I knew John Krasinski was going to survive because he was top billing.
Yes.
But when the minute that baby popped up, I was like, yeah, he's making it back because yeah. they need that like moment at the end. But I love that for those women. It's like, you loved me at my not this.
Yes.
Like Rob Thomas's wife, you yeah. know, like mm-hmm. met him when he was like his heaviest. And then it's like when he gets skinny, it's like, yes,
you're
we
like,
still
good
love
job.
You.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely.
Are they our favorite celebrity couple right now, Krasinski and Emily Blunt? Or is there another celebrity couple?
Another celebrity. I really do love Sterling K. Brown and his wife, Michelle. They are like the black Emily Blunt and John Krasinski, but Emily Blunt and John Krasinski are pretty far up there.
Yeah.
I was at the, oh God, here we go. So after
make sure
the,
you check out Jacqueline's awards podcast.
Thank you, the awards tour podcast. But I was at the Universal party post Oppenheimer after the Golden Globes, and I got there early because, you know, I didn't go to the show because whatever. I didn't want to sit through that. But at the end of it, I'm there. And John Krasinski's just there waiting for his wife. And I think that is just, like, kind of adorable. He's just, like,
so
sitting there talking to Jack Quaid, who was also not in the room. I just kind of like that because that's not every Hollywood couple. Mm-hmm.
Did you ask Krasinski mm-hmm. about Pablo Schreiber? Did you say, hey?
No, hey, I should.
Can you connect me with this guy?
I would ask John Krasinski about so many other things. I would ask him about how many times he's watched The Devil Wears Prada knowing that he has Emily sitting, like, literally Emily.
And
the
Stanley Tucci is your brother-in-law.
Right.
You get both.
You know, but, like, literally, that is, to me, I have so many, like, random people that I thirst over. He thirsted over her in that movie, and then he bagged her. Like, that
that's
is a
manifestation.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Speaking of 2024, manifestation here.
There you go.
You know, like,
celebrity couples.
It's like,
make it happen.
Alexi O'Halloran and Serena Williams. Like, he knew he had no shot. Like, he may be a billionaire now. He was not. He was just a nerdy little boy with a website going up to the greatest tennis player of all time. And being like, I'm a holler. And she was like, why?
Okay.
I think overall, this is just a whole podcast about the nerds succeeding. Just
the
fight
nerds.
For the nerds and the ones that just come to the top.
Yeah.
Fight for the nerds and let the nerds get shredded if they so choose.
1,000%.
If they so choose.
Because
exactly.
It doesn't get much nerdier than like a Krasinski or an Angiani initially from
yeah.
where they came from.
Yeah.
And now they're shredded and we should all appreciate them. For, you know, being inspirations. And I'm not saying I have their posters on every wall in my house. But
just a couple, right?
Just a couple, just to remind me.
Inspirational.
What I'm training for.
Yeah.
And look,
which I do get confused about sometimes.
Alzheimer's. I'm telling you, that's the best reason to exercise.
There's got to be more to why you're you wake up at like 6 in the morning to go to these workouts.
Now, legitimately, Alzheimer's and
endorphins, they make you happy.
A little bit of dopamine, but weed is legal in California, so I've got plenty on tap. I was just
this is great.
Oh my
Brian,
God.
This is the kind of serious action movie podcast I was hoping for.
Back to serious.
I've been pushing for this movie on the show. Since we started the show. And I was like, at some point, we got to talk 13 hours, right? And we're like, producing Lucy and Brian, they're like, yeah, we'll get there eventually. And Jack was just looking at me like, you poor thing.
Yeah.
You poor, poor thing. All right, yes, weed is legal in our state.
I honestly kind of forgot what I was going to say because I just wanted to laugh at that. So
I will put a button on this by saying the reason I work out, Mark likes his beers at the end of the night. So
there,
if I'm
yes.
just thinking a couple Coors Lights, that's what's going to get me through these squats. I do want to go to mailbags. We got a good question in here, Brian. So let's hit the music. You can email us anytime. Let us know what movies you want us to be covering, what you thought about the movies we did cover. What do you have to say about 13 Hours and how it relates to weed being legal in California? You can hit us up, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. You can be like Nicholas Bayfield, who's a Ketchup Crew member and a very fresh one at that. Nicholas writes, "Hi, Mark and Jacqueline. As you've already discussed, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in one of your earliest episodes, I think now might be the time to follow it up with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. At 70% on Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter, it ranks lower than Crystal Skull's 77% certified fresh score, which is slightly disappointing. And despite a fresh change in the filmmaking team, I think Dial of Destiny is more on par with Crystal Skull than the original trilogy, particularly with the use of CGI and older Harrison Ford, and suspending your disbelief on particular scenes like the third act. Thanks for reading." Thank you for the suggestion, Nicholas. I kind of like that idea. I didn't really get a read on whether Nicholas liked the movie or not. So
I know, I can't
tell. We'll have to get a little deeper into that.
Keeping it close to your chest, sir, Nicholas.
Yeah.
I'm a defender of this movie.
So am I.
I flippin' loved this movie. I was so upset, and I saw it with the worst audience ever. Again, this is where I hate
you. Sound like the Simpsons comic book guy.
I know.
Worst audience ever.
I did, but I saw it at the Cannes Film Festival with all of these French people. They were like, "This is not a movie.
Oh,
this is just bullshit and CGI." France. And it started at a 40. It started at a 40 when it debuted.
It was
but
a climb.
I flipping loved this movie. I felt so bad that the reviews early didn't reflect that, and I think that depressed its box office. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is amazing. The Last Crusade is my favorite Indiana Jones movie. Sorry, purist, but I love it. So sorry.
That's my favorite indie as well. Yeah. Are you an indie fan, Candace?
No.
Oh.
I feel like people are going to come for me.
You're not into
Whips?
I've
only seen one, and it's just the one that I. With Shia LaBeouf, because I was somehow on the set for that. So that's the only reason why I watched
anybody
that movie.
Listening or watching right now has instantly forgiven you, because you're not talking about the beloved classic trilogy. That's like a...
Yeah, no.
And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I can defend it to a point.
Yeah.
I would suggest the original trilogy, because it's just fantastic. And it's, if nothing else, it's Apex Harrison Ford.
Okay,
it's
so like, I'm going to put that on my list.
Put it on the list. You're our action movie correspondent, so
I got to come back in.
Dip your toe in the adventure waters. And if anybody has a problem with the third act of Dial of Destiny, need I remind you again, the third act of Last Crusade is the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life.
There's an immortal soldier.
He's 800 years old, Jacqueline.
Just kicking it in the back.
By himself.
Are you serious? Ugh, come on. And all of those booby traps, none of them messed up in all of that amount of time.
They still work.
Mm-mm.
Pretty crazy stuff. Candace, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course.
It was a pleasure seeing you again, having you here. Thank you for checking out 13 Hours, the very intense thrill ride that it was. Where can everybody like check out what you're doing, what you're working on? And always, Lola, where is like the hub? Where's the easiest way to find it, I guess?
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me on. I love that we went from your Roman Empire and all of this down to what we talked about. So it's such a blast. But everyone can find me on all my social media at Candace R. Cruz. Across the board. Hopefully some exciting things down the pipeline in the new year in 2024. And then with Always Lola, you can find us on Apple and Amazon.
That is so cool to say, isn't it?
It is. I'm sorry. I'm just like, oh my God, this is so cool.
We
got to get you on Vudu. We got to get you on Vudu.
And you are fantastic in it as well.
Oh,
I know it had a great festival run, and now everybody out there can see Always Lola. So put the comma in there if you're searching for it, just in case. Always comma Lola. So
lovely.
There you go. Jacqueline, where can folks check out the award show podcast?
Yeah, the awards tour podcast you can find on Rotten Tomatoes in the awards tour hub. We have the podcast link. Also, you can go to our Rotten Tomatoes movie clips channel to see the video version. And anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple. I don't know where the other places that people listen to podcasts at, but you can find it there as well.
Wherever you put the candy in your ears, that's where you can find the awards tour podcast.
The awards tour podcast.
All right.
Our last episode is with Sterling K. Brown. He talks a little DC about maybe or not him playing a little character called Jon Stewart.
Ooh,
we get that going.
Wow, okay.
We also have our first episode is with Ludwig Göransson.
There you go.
Composer of Oppenheimer.
All right. So check that out. See, they're doing big things. I'm just here anchoring this show as best I can, defending a great action movie like 13 Hours. My name is Mark Ellis, at Mark Ellis Live. I have upcoming tour dates starting in early March. We got Vegas, Boston, Chicago, Houston, New York, some other Portland, some other places. So you can check that out at markellis.live. And once again, email us, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Subscribe, rate, and review. All the stuff that Jacqueline was encouraging you to do for the Award Store podcast, you can start here and do it for here, for us as well. In a couple weeks, Jacqueline, we got a brand new episode dropping. What are we talking about?
We're talking about a movie that I feel is also unfairly maligned. This is going to be me a little bit to you because I felt like the canary in the coal mine talking about the greatness that is The Kingsman. And nobody else like
The Kingsman.
The Kingsman, not The Kingsman Circle with the
third one.
The third one with the very fine Harris Dickerson.
I couldn't remember if it was actually a movie that got made or not.
It is.
I didn't throw shade at it. I had never seen it before. I was in the dark. And maybe I've been shown the light.
I do feel sometimes with these like comedy white boy action movies, they all get kind of lumped together. And this was one that should have been differentiated.
Okay.
It really should have been.
All right. So I think you just got Candace to tune in on that episode. She's intrigued.
Listen, I've already got a couple of things I need to listen to when I get in the car. I'm like, I want to hear Shirley K.
Homework,
Brown.
Young lady.
I have movies to watch. Come back and tell you all the feedback.
She used to just be our Gerard Butler, you know, representative. And now... Candace Cruz.
We've moved on to John Krasinski.
If we're kicking ass, it's Candace Cruz.
Yes.
Make it a tagline.
I like
Make
that.
It a tagline.
That's our bumper stick. You can get it at our merch store when we have one. For producer Brian, for Candace, for Jacqueline, I am Emilia Mark Ellis, the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes and RottenTomatoes.com. Thanks for tuning in to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, and we will see you next time.